Hello, everyone, and welcome to Eat Life News, a show dedicated to bringing you all the latest headlines, scoops, and narratives going on in the crazy world of Ethereum. I'm your host, Dennis Omer. We're joined by my co-host, DeFi Dude, and Lister and Brighton. Our first big news story this week revolves around Compound, well known as one of the biggest and most established DeFi projects out there. There's right now over $10 billion worth of value locked up in there being lent and borrowed. It's a great lending borrowing protocol. It's considered as a blue chip. And on the 30th of September, they had, let's say, a protocol upgrade. Something called Protocol 62 went live. And what this did was it changed the distribution ratios between liquidity suppliers and borrowers from the previous 50-50 splits into new ratios, you know, how rewards are distributed. Unfortunately, this upgrade contained a very, very minor bug. If I got it correct, it might have been like equal sign missing next to a larger than sign, something like that. But what the bug allowed was for users to withdraw far more comp than they were actually eligible for. And obviously, there's a bug. There's lots of people just withdrawing more and more comp than they should have. But because Compound is decentralized, this bug can't be patched. The distribution contract cannot be changed without a 7-day governance interaction. And the bottom line is, right now, I think $90 million worth of comp has been distributed to users who weren't eligible for this distribution. Unsurprisingly, the price of comp tanked by over 11% on the news, although I think it's recovered a bit by now, but it raised so much discussion online around this mantra of code is law. I.e., if the contract pays out comp, then the user should be allowed to take it since he received it from a contract that allowed it to do so.
Yeah, and of course, the Compound team and Robert, you know, they asked the people to return those tokens because rightfully they shouldn't get them. But, you know, one of Robert's tweet came off as a little bit heavy-handed and hypocritical, kind of threw, you know, a lot of people off. He basically threatened to report the people who overclaimed to the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, if they didn't return the funds. So if you're not from the U.S., that's basically our three-letter tax organization. You don't want to mess with them. They're very serious about what they do. But crypto people and the IRS, generally, it's like they don't get along. So to say that and threaten them with that threw a lot of people off. They weren't really happy about that. It's kind of hypocritical as well. Back in June, you know, after a Curve member proposed that Curve should start enforcing its intellectual property by hiring a lawyer, he tweeted about it saying, crying to meet space courts deeply undermines the code is law principles that DeFi was founded on. This is a slippery slope and ends with the end of DeFi. Hypocritical there a little bit, people were saying, and threatening to dox people to the IRS is, you know, kind of the very definition of crying to the meat space courts. So many people disliked the threat, and, you know, I saw a few tweets about some people who were going to voluntarily return the comp, but after receiving those threats, they said they'd keep it. So I'm not sure. He did end up backpedaling on that whole IRS thing, saying, you know, he regrets tweeting it or whatever. They were all probably very stressed under a lot of stuff. So, who knows there. But I did see people were returning some of their comp. I don't know exactly who was returning how much, but I know he was tweeting, you know, every time one of the accounts that received extra returned some, he was tweeting like, hey, thanks blank for returning the funds. So it does seem a handful returned their funds already. I'm not sure how much it adds up to, though.
I think the criticism of Robert is warranted because, like, no one has, like, we're just navigating through a completely new space, right? None of us have the answers completely or exactly. It's such an innovative space. We don't know exactly how the law applies to us. Like, we talk about decentralization, but what does that mean? Can you do harm, for example? Are you allowed to do it just because you're doing it in a decentralized way? You know, there are some moral unanswered questions here. Like, even I'm not sure what should happen. We do want DeFi to expand one day and become part of what the whole financial system is built on. In that case, are we suggesting that the laws shouldn't apply? If they do apply, how do they apply? So I think these are unanswered questions. You can't take two different positions that kind of contradict each other depending on whether it was your project that had the vulnerability or someone else's. Anyway, let's see how that is actually going to play out. Now, in other DeFi news, we had Société Générale, which is one of the largest banks in France, and they're pretty much a multinational company. The cool thing is they applied for a $20 million MakerDAO loan, and they're going to be using their own bond tokens as collateral for this loan. So what happened was people just kind of went on the MakerDAO governance forum, and there was a proposal from Société Générale itself. And this proposal is basically an application towards MakerDAO to accept on-chain bond tokens issued by the bank as collateral for a stablecoin DAI loan. It is a pretty complex loan. There's going to be many intermediaries involved. I think that there's going to be a number of legal entities and third parties involved in this. But the collateral itself will be a AAA-rated 0% fixed-rate bonds. And these are actually bonds that were issued by the bank last year, and they do mature in 2025. And the cool thing is they've managed to fit this whole thing, this like both bond tokens, they managed to fit this whole concept within the French law framework, let's say. I mean, both tokens and DAI is actually recognized under French law. And, you know, the bank itself mentioned that this is actually a pilot case. And, you know, what they're trying to do is they're trying to experiment with it to see how DAI, how MakerDAO, or even DeFi can work under the French legal framework. You know, they, as I mentioned, the kind of workflow, the intermediaries, the whole architecture is a bit complex. For example, you have Société Générale itself, you have a subsidiary involved, you have MakerDAO, you have this DIIS group that serves as a security agent. There's going to be a MakerDAO legal representative and another third-party exchange or third-party entity to facilitate the exchange from the DAI that is borrowed into dollars. I think this is very positive news as we gradually see DeFi creep more and more into the more traditional CeFi space. DeFi, dude, I don't know if you saw this news article and what you thought of it.
Yeah, I think it's really cool. And personally, I do think it's good news. I know that a lot of, I think early on, DeFi people and crypto people might say, well, you know, we don't want these centralized people or traditional finance people to be coming into our territory and, you know, using our DeFi and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I would disagree. It's only a matter of time anyway before that kind of stuff happens. So it's really cool to see them experimenting with this. And yeah, just really curious to see where it goes. And we do have actually some more news with traditional finance companies and businesses. So a big story this week is with Visa. So obviously the intersection of DeFi and CeFi that we were talking about. We've got Visa, who's developed a conceptual protocol that shows how various central bank digital currencies, otherwise known as CBDCs, can be interoperable for payments. And they've actually deployed their very first ever sample smart contract on Ethereum's Ropsten testnet. So the concept itself, it's called Universal Payments Channel, and it outlines kind of how different blockchains can interconnect to allow for the transfer of these CBDCs. So in comments for the block, they mentioned that to have a great consumer experience and widespread merchant acceptable, you need to have the ability to make and receive payments regardless of the currency, the channel, you know, form factor, and that's where Visa's UPC concept kind of comes in. So yeah, so this very first deployment on Ropsten is kind of part of their developing of this UPC concept. They also mentioned that they're ramping up their knowledge and expertise in this area. You know, we've seen them hiring for Ethereum and stuff roles in the past, learning Solidity, writing smart contracts in Ethereum and that kind of stuff. So, you know, CBDCs outside of even Visa have been kind of a hot topic somewhat in the past year or so, a few months. So really cool to see them experimenting with this as well. And we'll see where that goes.
Yeah. And then people ask us why we're so bullish about Ethereum, why we're so focused on Ethereum. When you have Visa, when you have multinational companies, when you have, as we mentioned every week, like all the Hollywood, the media, like and it, artists, everyone using Ethereum, how can we not be more bullish? You know, and this is part of the reason why we're not really that interested in other blockchains. Like, sure, they might be doing great stuff, a lot of progress, but all the activity, as we keep seeing, keeps happening on Ethereum. Here we have Visa deploying smart contracts on their on Ethereum's testnet and saying, you know, we're going to be learning Solidity, we're going to be writing smart contracts, we're bringing CBDCs to Ethereum, to the blockchain. So that's why we're very bullish. Now, moving on to more DeFi news. This week, we saw that Index Coop is partnering with Polygon to bring what's called the Polygon Diversified Index, also known as the PDI. And what this token will let you do just by holding it is basically give you exposure to the most influential Polygon network projects. And okay, these aren't completely native to Polygon. Some of them are also established on Ethereum as well. But this gives you at least like kind of some kind of exposure to projects that are also on Polygon. And these include Matic, they included Aave, they included QuickSwap, San, Ghost, QI, and a few other tokens. And we've been covering Polygon's explosive growth week after week. And as of last looking, there is 1.3 million daily active addresses and the whole network is processing 6.2 million daily transactions, making them right now the largest and most popular scaling solution on Ethereum. And if I'm not mistaken, the daily active users, or let's say the daily active addresses on Polygon, have surpassed in number the ones on Ethereum. And every day, we keep seeing more and more of this infrastructure layer built for scaling solutions. Another story from this week was that Etherscan just unveiled a new page on their BlockScan website, where you can go and you can look at the smart contract addresses for all the bridges that link Ethereum to the other blockchains. So there was all over 33 different bridges from Ethereum. And it's not just, you know, Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon. You also have bridges to Solana, to Avalanche, to other blockchains. And, you know, if you want to double check that you're depositing your money to the right address, then you can come to this website and see the verified smart contract addresses. In other DeFi news, I heard that we might be getting gasless trading, right?
Yep. So we've got Matcha, which is a aggregator provided by the 0x team, similar to kind of like 1inch or previous aggregators, and they just launched their gasless trading. So this is pretty cool. It allows users to trade on Ethereum without using any gas or slippage. Of course, it kind of sounds like magic. Like, how do you just abstract or take away that entire fee or the gas? So first, when you select the gasless trade, Matcha is going to return an individualized slippage-free price quote from a professional market maker. And as long as you're okay with that quote, you're going to sign the transaction, and then the market maker submits that transaction to be verified on-chain while paying for the gas for you. So of course, some users commented that, you know, when doing this, the price will be worse technically, but an engineer from 0x responded and said, you know, the price can remain the same because the market makers, they don't have to sit on a quote for 30 to 60 seconds where they would have to price in the risk that the market moves in that time. So with this approach, you know, that risk is taken away. Therefore, market makers can kind of quote a better price. And personally, I think this is just awesome. Anything to do with abstracting gas or moving a fee, even if it's put into another place, it just user experience, I feel like, is just goes way up for that. So that's really cool to see.
Yeah, that's been a pain point in crypto for a while now, right? How do you kind of remove the need to have ETH in your wallet for a transaction fee, for example? I don't know if you do need ETH for it, but now you're not going to be paying for the transaction. The market maker takes that risk, let's say, and you end up with free, in quotes, trading. I think it's a huge improvement. I think it's a great step forward in DeFi to be able to have this option. In other news, we thought we'd bring you some updates about Virgil Griffith. For those of you out of the loop, like, Virgil has been an Ethereum developer, researcher, and OG for years now. He's been very well known in the Ethereum space. And a few years ago, he actually attended a blockchain conference in North Korea. He had originally asked the American government for permission to go, and he was denied. So I think he flew through China to get to North Korea. And he gave a speech about cryptocurrencies. I think on one of the PowerPoints, he demonstrated how North Korea could avoid sanctions and showed that, you know, how anyone can transfer money to any other wallet hosted in North Korea, for example, and just transfer it to a wallet hosted in some other country, which isn't really allowed by the US government. And unfortunately, because of this, you know, Virgil was actually prosecuted as soon as he came back to the US. I don't know, after some time, he was arrested. And just this week, he pleaded guilty to conspiring to help North Korea dodge sanctions, and he got a 6-year prison sentence.
Yeah, and I just want to jump in, and you know, there's been a lot of thoughts on this publicly and on Twitter, a lot of takes and stuff. And I personally think it is kind of silly. So yes, there's some wrongdoings. Obviously, you know, Virgil's own government said don't go. He still kind of went. But at the same time, you know, the demonstration he did, even if it's just sending funds or money, you know, it's one of the fundamentals of cryptocurrency, being able to send money or crypto from one wallet to another, regardless of the location. So what he did, what he demonstrated, isn't something that was like totally unknown to North Korea. Like, to really think nobody in North Korea could figure out how to send funds without Virgil and that kind of stuff, it's a little silly. I don't know. A lot of people in the same boat, they kind of agree, like, does he deserve 6 years in prison for demonstrating this? No, probably not. Could he have made better decisions? Maybe, yeah. But it's just, yeah, kind of sad to see, obviously. And I guess, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I mean, it's unfortunate, but
I think you're right in that all the information that he shared is already public, and it's the ABC of cryptocurrency. How to have a private key, for example, how to sign using that private key, which means how you can transfer value from one place to another. And you know, it's not like North Korea doesn't have the know-how to use technology, you know, and especially cryptocurrencies. You know, I don't think Virgil was breaking ground in North Korea with what he was saying. But then again, there are sanctions against North Korea that Virgil should have been aware of, and he was told not to go. But I think in general, it's just a very unfortunate situation that I don't think warrants a 6-year prison sentence. Like, what kind of punishment? I think it's just the government is trying to make an example of him more than just punishing him for having shown how to transfer funds. Now, moving from there to NFT news. As always, it's been another crazy week with some ridiculous news items and Snoop Dogg again. So, DeFi, dude, give us an update of what's happening.
Yeah, definitely. So we do have Snoop Dogg sporting a CryptoPunk on crypto Twitter now. So I think he's got like 13 million followers, or one of the biggest followings on Twitter to actually have an NFT profile picture. So that's kind of cool. Will be also cool when they have the NFT verified Twitter picture thing that they mentioned as well. That's coming eventually. But in actual like release news and that kind of stuff, so we do have Rarible, which is, you know, the NFT platform you can buy, sell NFTs on. They actually took a big step this last week in terms of onboarding like mainstream and allowing users to purchase NFTs directly with a credit card. So previously, similar to some services, I believe you could top up your wallet, you could get some ETH with your credit card, but now you can actually like buy the full-on NFT with your credit card. So, you know, one of the biggest issues for people who are new to crypto a lot of the times is getting onboarded, getting your money, you know, understanding how transactions work, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of people too, if you're buying crypto from an exchange, you usually have to wait like a couple of days, the bank to clear it and stuff. So yeah, being able to buy NFTs with credit card, really cool. It's quick, easy to do. So glad to see that support kind of against the whole, you know, crypto people, everyone loves, you know, buying and trading with crypto, but still good to have. Some people will prefer credit card and USD or whatever, and just got to accept that.
Yeah, I think this is a great step, because at the end of the day, it's reducing friction to people who might not be technically, you know, competent enough or want to, you know, go the old route of sending money to an exchange and from the exchange creating a new hot wallet and transferring funds. Here, it's just one extra step, right? Although I don't know the details. When you do buy with your credit card, where is the crypto sent to? Is it, it's not Rarible, obviously, custodying it for you, right? Are you creating a wallet? So these are still something that we have to look into and see how it at all actually works. But at the end of the day, it's just, you know, reducing friction by one more step. Let's say that's always a good sign when we do want to achieve mass adoption.
And next up in NFT news, we do have Time Magazine news. So like the Time Magazine, you've got their president, Keith Grossman. He's launched an NFT drop through Time or with Time somewhat recently. However, he did come out just the other day and he kind of opened up about their failures in the NFT drop. So, you know, like many other NFT drops, the Time one was hit pretty hard due to like bots, you know, gas wars, that kind of stuff. Usually a lot of these things, they run into some issues. So in addition to that, all of the NFTs for Time were minted in like less than a minute. So a lot of people kind of felt a little cheated. They kind of felt like they missed out, that kind of thing. And Keith was pretty open about the situation. He shared, you know, the steps they're taking for their next drop to ensure it isn't the same. So basically anyone who owns the first Time NFT or anyone who had a failed transaction. So, you know, if you tried to buy the NFT, you missed out, didn't get a second chance, you're going to get a special NFT. And this special NFT is also going to act as kind of like the whitelisting token or the mint pass for their next NFT drop. So that's kind of cool. It's going to act as like additional security to make sure you don't miss out on the second one if you want to take part. And I guess the takeaway or kind of bright side of the situation as well is like, we, you know, kind of verified there will be another Time Magazine NFT drop, which I personally find really cool to see, like something like Time Magazine dropping an NFT. Like that's one I personally would like to just collect just to, you know, save on to years and years from now. It's like, oh yeah, Time Magazine when they did that. So there will be another NFT drop. I don't know the dates or information, but I guess that's the takeaway there.
I was actually thinking, okay, this is a really cool idea. If I wanted to participate, how much is the gas cost actually going to be? Just so I have a rough idea, we're talking about like $500 in gas costs?
It really depends on the gas war. Sometimes, yeah, gas war could easily send it up to $500 for a transaction. Usually like maybe 100, 200 or so.
Because you personally like have experience, right, where you haven't been able to participate and you spent a ton on gas costs as well. And who else? There was someone else from the Ethereum community who spent thousands in gas costs. I think it was for the Ashton Kutcher project.
Right.
We've covered it before.
The Stoner.
Stoner cats, right?
Yep, kitties. Stoner cats.
Yeah. So how much were in those cases? How much was it there?
So for there, it was like, with Stoner Cats, I think you would have ended up minting one and paying like $500, $1,000 maybe. It was a lot. I think I was trying to mint two maybe or three. And yeah, it ended up costing me like $1,300 or something that I ended up losing as well. And they made it whole in the end. Everyone got their money back. But yeah, it was very expensive. Super Fizz in the community lost out on $13,000 in fees. And was given it back, so, you know, made whole. But still, yeah, it can get very pricey. And next up in NFT news, we have a little bit sadder, you know, just because it's our beloved PoOP. They ran into some issues the other day. It's all sorted out, all fixed, nothing, you know, to worry about in the long run or anything. But PoOP did see an internal breach of their minting process the other day, so it resulted in older PoOPs being reminted. So as far as I know of the situation, they made a little tweet thread about it. There was a specific PoOP being targeted, and I'm assuming this PoOP would have granted you access to something or, you know, act as a ticket to something or something of that kind of sort, because obviously they target it, they minted extras, then they went and sold it on OpenSea. And you know, this wasn't easy to know or even recognize if you were like a victim of this, because you're buying a PoOP, you think it's a PoOP. How would you have any idea that this was like a breached one or, you know, a fake, I guess? And the only way to tell would be to look at the mint date. You know, obviously it was minted very recently as opposed to the originals. So all in all, PoUP has come out stating, you know, those extra breached ones were burned and they shouldn't exist. And they're also refunding users for any fees and costs that may have been lost during this situation. It wasn't like a huge tons of money was lost, but still sad to see. Glad to see that it's all fixed up, though, and everyone, you know, was made happy.
So what I'm curious is, who bought these on OpenSea? Like, is there like a vibrant secondary market for PoUP event, or were these just any PoUPs being minted?
Right. So the market for PoUPs, yeah, definitely isn't there for like a lot of them. I think it really must have been like a big ticket PoUP, you know, one that might grant you access to something, an NFT project or platform, or who knows, but it definitely wasn't just a regular PoUP. There was more to the PoUP than just being, you know, an NFT, as far as I know. And moving away from NFTs, kind of last thing on the list is the Gas Now. It is a popular ETH gas price forecasting service and tracker. You know, it's actually the service you'd want to use if you're trying to figure out the gas war for an NFT drop, kind of see what the gas is then. You would probably use Gas Now. And it was arguably the most used and most popular gas tracker as well, with real-time data being run by one of the biggest pools, Spark Pool. And like, that's why I believe their data was so accurate too, is just overall good service, very accurate. However, they recently ran into some service issues, Spark Pool did, due to this China ban. And they are shutting down their China operations, Spark Pool stated, to all Chinese customers and everything over there. So Gas Now, though, which is also owned by SparkPool, has made notices that they're going to end all services. They're just totally going to shut down, including their website, their API, and their browser extension by the 15th of October. Kind of sad to see, you know, because of how accurate, just how awesome they were. There's already tons of people, like on Twitter, and I saw, like, asking to buy out their source code and get that. Yeah, haven't seen any other further responses from them other than just, we're shutting down, sorry. And
yeah, this is very sad to see, and it's sad because it comes in the heels of that news we brought to you last week about China's regulatory clampdown on cryptocurrencies. And just like a one-second TLDR is that China's basically banned all crypto activity. They had previously banned mining, but this time it looks like they're pretty serious. And it wasn't just, SparkPool that was impacted for it, but whole websites like CoinMarketCap, CoinGecko, even TradingView is now banned and inaccessible in China. So that's a bit worrying to see. But, you know, apart from that, the Ethereum world keeps chugging along. And on that note, thank you everyone for joining us on another week of Ethereum news. And until we catch you next time, bye-bye.
Thanks, everyone.
This podcast is supported by the awesome team at Kyber Network. For more information and to find out how Kyber Network provides liquidity to over 100 different dApps, wallets, and exchanges, check out kyber.network.